On Sunday, two assailants gunned down two Metro officers at an Eastside Pizza restaurant in what investigators believe was essentially a political assassination. Former Metro Sheriff Bill Young has had to lead the department when officers died on duty, but faced nothing quite like this. And he joins us now to give us his insights into how this has affected Metro. Sheriff Young, welcome back to KNPR.
Thank you.
What did you think when you first heard this?
Disbelief, sickness to my stomach.
This is just nothing like this has happened before.
No, not in our town. I can think of some horrible crimes. I think back, but I do not think there was anything more horrific than this particular crime in my lifetime in Las Vegas for a variety of reasons.
When you say nothing more horrific, what raises it to that kind of level for you?
You know, I get crimes of opportunity that go bad, robberies that don't happen the way they should have. And I get homicide, crimes of passion, greed, jealousy. I get all that. But I do not get this one at all. These two suspects are such zeros in this world. These are two subhuman beings, in my opinion, that have never accomplished a thing in their lives. I'm sure they've done a lot of drugs. That's probably their biggest accomplishment. They've committed crimes. They've never contributed to society. They live as street urchins. They've taken up with this so-called anti-government right to bear arms, government suppressing this movement that somehow is transcended to Nevada because of this Clive and Bundy clown out here in Bunkerville. And it's that philosophy of hatred for our government and our way of life that just completely, for somebody like me, I do not understand the motives of this crime. Two innocent police officers minding their own business, doing nothing. A citizen who is trying to do the right thing, which we teach our people to do. He's somebody that I would call a hero, or somebody I would want my children to emulate, that the gentleman who went in to try to stop this.
Now, this is the man in the Walmart who tried to.
In the Walmart. Mm-hmm. And to be most of these people shot in the back of their heads by these two despicable human beings is just amazing to me. And it hasn't quite sunk in. But, you know, I carry a little heavier heart than most because, you know, I didn't know either officer personally. Well, I did know Officer Beck. He was a very, really good police officer, well known for his training abilities.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about him.
He was, you know, what I knew of him, he was just a super good cop. He'd been around since 2001. And my interaction with him was that he was a DTI, defensive tactics instructor, very well known at that. Taught at the academy a lot. One of my sons is a police officer, thought the world of him, said he was a great instructor. And he taught at our academies and within the department consistently. I believe Officer Soldo hired on while I was sheriff in 2006. You know, and I probably pinned his badge on his chest. I'm not 100% sure, but good likely. And, you know, both of them are good, solid police officers with good records and both family men. And that's the part that just is most troubling, both leaving behind wives and young children, one with a newborn. And it does befuddle me. And I say it's a horrific crime.
You know a lot of the people who are at Metro. What are you hearing about how the officers are reacting?
Well, a couple cops stopped me. I talked to at Starbucks this morning, and they're just, you know, like me, you know, shaking their heads, wondering why. And of course, I called my son, who's a patrol officer, yesterday, and I spoke to him again just a few minutes ago to ask him how he was doing and his squad. I told him to tell his squad I was thinking of him, and you know, they're going on to two shifts, 12 on, 12 off, and you know, the sheriff has made a wise move and going to the two roster, AB roster, which closes ranks a little bit and gives you two officers per car, essentially, in all units, which is comforting during these times to the families, to the officers themselves, and to make sure this was an isolated incident. And, I can't speak for the ongoing investigation, but I'm pretty sure from what I've heard that these were two isolated people, and they're not related to anything bigger in any of these other movements that are going on, and that they acted on their own. Mm.
any death on duty impacts officers, surely. But how do officers get back in on the job in the right frame of mind? What do they need to do to get moving forward?
Policing, in general, takes a special human being. And most you got to be a caregiver, a doer, a helper. You got to have somewhat of a type A personality at times. You got to shake it off, put it aside, and continue to go do your job and treat everybody as they're expected to be treated, as we expect them as citizens. And I'm a citizen now, and I'm not a police officer anymore. And remind yourself that 99% of the people in this world are generally good and are not there to create a problem. Mm. You know, they're going to have moments where they probably are a little short-tempered or shouldn't, like anybody else, they're not perfect.
But as human beings,
I can tell you that, I think about today, I'm 58 years old, things I did when I was a police officer that I know affect me today, that I shook off back then. I was an ambulance driver before that. So since the time I was 18 until I was 50, it was, doing things that a lot of people find unpleasant, seeing things from, blood, injuries, death, horrific crimes. You do that over years and years, and cops have this mentality, unfortunately, that we're super hard and super tough. And I don't think until later in my career did I realize that police officers need to start dealing with that before they're hired and the day that they're hired, and learn that they're not as tough emotionally as they think they are. And this can play out later on in life. And certainly this tragedy here is going to affect a lot of people on this department. I predict that there'll be officers that will look at this, sit down with their families and say, I've been lucky so far. I think I'll hang it up. I may retire or may get into a different line of work. I sure wouldn't want to leave my wife and kids behind like those two officers did. I think that there's officers that will think about this going on calls. There's a lot of discourse and complaining and outcry at various times in this community, and rightfully so, when there's an officer-involved shooting involving a police officer and a suspect, and there should be that discourse. Cops got to obey the rules and be held accountable to do the job that we're paying them to do. We give them the training, the best tools, good pay, good benefits, high expectations of a police officer, expect them to perform at the highest level. But I will tell you something. You get into a situation like this where it's so dynamic and lives are on the line, sometimes cops overreact or underreact. Now, in this case, somebody asked me today, what did these cops do wrong? Why? Well, they did absolutely nothing wrong. When I came on a department, and, probably still today it's taught, you go into a restaurant or a coffee shop, you don't sit with your back to the door. It's an old adage that, if you're a police officer, you sit where you can see the front door of the entrance, or if it's a bar or a restaurant where you can view the door, the cash register, where any possible crime perhaps might take place. And, I don't know the setups of the CC's Pizza, but these two officers were working in the community that they serve, eating their lunch within the community that they work in a nice little, I've been told, pizza parlor that was very welcoming and a routine stop for Metro police officers and members of the community, doing nothing wrong. Bothering nobody, being there. But, the mere fact that you wear a uniform with a badge, as I said, you're representing not just the police department, you're representing, this was two deaths inflicted on us, the people, the community. We all lost something, not just the Metropolitan Police Department. Mm-hmm. Every citizen in this town lost two very important mm-hmm. people.
We are talking with former Metro Sheriff Bill Young about Sunday's shootings on the east side of Las Vegas. I want to play a little bit of a clip from the news conference. This is Assistant Sheriff Kevin McMahon, who is speaking at the conference, and here's a little bit of what he had to say.
We don't necessarily believe that they are white supremacists or associated with the Nazi movement. We believe that they equate government and law enforcement, fascism, and those who support it with Nazis. In other words, they believe that law enforcement is the oppressor and they're associated with the Nazi movement.
Now he's speaking there about Jared and Amanda Miller, the two people identified as the shooters. The Millers seem to have subscribed to an anti-government ideology that's just really pretty ferocious in nature, and that's ultimately why they targeted these police officers. But what can be done to stop or even slow this ideology spreading in the age of social media and the internet?
You know, I think ideas are you know, something that reasonable people think through and think out. And, you know, what's apparent here is that we've got two very unintelligent people, uneducated, non-thinking people that are thinking in a very small term. And what little I know of Mr. Miller's ideology is that he felt very, very oppressed because he is an ex-felon, was not allowed to carry firearms, even though that the crimes that he was convicted of, he said he didn't hurt anybody. So that was his big axe on society.
And yet, even if there was, you know, not much intelligence going on there, they were still able to tap into this, what amount to streams of hate,
if you will. It's really unfortunate. And you know, I met Clavin Bundy once while I was sheriff, spoke to him, and, you know, he's being brought into this thing, and I called him a clown earlier. I apologize for that. He really isn't. He's a rancher that has very limited experience in this world. He just doesn't happen to have that full breadth of understanding that I believe that most people should be. He's spent too much time out there in Bunkerville by the terms that he was using with African Americans, and that's that very small thinking, that not that big picture thinking that I think envelopes some of these people in this movement. But what's unfair is that the media has glommed on to these people, knowing that they're not thinking big, broad, bright ideas. They're thinking about very small individual problems that they have. This guy's upset because he's got to pay grazing fees and he doesn't like turtles. Well, get with the program. You know what? Every other rancher, real rancher in the state of Nevada is paying their grazing fees. If you can't make money or do it right, get out of the business. Mm-hmm. What he doesn't get is that he's not entitled to that land just because his family happened to. It belongs to all of us. And the media seized on that guy and his deal out there, which brought in all these other like-minded people, and they gave them their 15 minutes of fame, and none of them deserve it.
And that's what I wanted to ask about. Do you think that the protests in Bunkerville at the Bundy Ranch served as a magnet for people like the Millers? There seems to be every indication.
I used to live in Mesquite. I'm familiar with people out there. It's a good, wholesome LDS-founded community of people that you know, really good folks. And to see some of the absolute criminals and thugs that I saw walking with Clavin Bundy that he had beside him made me sick to my stomach. He created a monster out there that's drawn attention to our state that as a fourth-generation native Nevadan, I'm embarrassed about.
Now, his son, Ammon, told media a little bit earlier today that they kicked the Millers off.
You know what?
Off.
It's too late for the Bundys to talk about who they kicked out. I looked at the pictures of the people out there, and I think there's national media interviews with this gentleman, Mr. Miller, there with Mr. Bundy, photographs with him. And you know what? They created that situation, and they're still continuing to have armed people out there. You know, this thing could have been settled and handled completely differently.
We are talking with former Metro Sheriff Bill Young about the aftermath of the murder of two police officers on Sunday by a couple, Jared and Amanda Miller. One of the Millers' neighbors told reporters the couple was always talking about things like killing police. Were the neighbors derelict? Should they have said something?
You know, I think I'm not going to criticize the neighbors because I believe that the Metropolitan Police Department had reports about these folks making threats in the past, and I believe Metro detectives have interviewed these folks in the past. That's all I'm going to say about it. You'll have to get further comment on that from Metro, but that's my understanding. And they were deemed to be, at the time, stable and not capable of or realistic in their threats. But here again, they fooled a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And this couple only moved from Indiana to Las Vegas in the last few months.
Yes, and I want to remind everybody in the country, these are not Nevadans. Mm-hmm. These are not examples of Las Vegas people. These are imports from out of state.
Yeah, and they were making a living, apparently, posing as movie characters down on Fremont Street. And maybe the irony is it was the picture from Facebook, their Facebook account, was the Joker. Is Las Vegas more vulnerable than other cities to people who are disaffected or maybe disconnected from society and feel the system has somehow cheated them?
I raised four kids here very successfully. All four of them turned out to be pretty decent human beings. I know a lot of people that grew up here that turned out to be really good human beings. I'm awful proud of this city. Yeah, we, like a lot of cities, have our problems. And yes, we have a different industry. We're in the tourism and entertainment business, which causes 43 million people to visit our city. There's a lot of turnover and a lot of people coming here and looking at it. So yeah, I think it brings a variety of people here for a variety of reasons. And, you know, our economy's kind of up and down, and it's good sometimes, it's not so good other times. And I think it creates an environment where we do get some different types of people that haven't made it elsewhere.
This attack has some echoes of Timothy McVeigh's attack on the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City in 1995. The Millers apparently had plans to attack government buildings in Las Vegas if their plan had worked yesterday. Is this kind of anti-government violence inevitable, maybe whenever a Democrat is in the White House or when pro-gun groups start raising alarms about bans on ammunition and gun ownership?
Oh, God, I sure hope not, because we're going to have Democrats in the White House. We've had Democrats and Republicans, and, you know, it shouldn't matter. We should all support our president. You know, I'm a Republican, but I support President Obama every single day in what he's trying to do. He's, you know, and I would expect the same most Democrats. What's bothersome is the divisiveness in Congress and the constant, we can't get anything done. And it is creating that. And, you know, the gun rights folks, I'm first to say that I'm a Second Amendment supporter and believer. It's one of our founding principles. But I also think a little shred of common sense should be inserted at certain places. And I, you know, last legislature, state legislature by the name of Justin Jones approached me, and he crafted a form of legislation that required a background check, what I call a loophole, what he called a loophole. And these gun shows that occur at convention centers and whatnot, private sales, and you can walk into these gun shows and anybody can buy a firearm. Whereas if you go to Bass Pro Shops or Cabela's or somewhere else, you got a waiting period, you get a FBI check, so on and so forth. You just don't walk out of there with the firearm. And it's because of incidents and people like that that those laws were crafted. And I felt the right thing to do was support that, as did most, if not all, the major city police chiefs in the United States. And our legislature passed it, yet our governor, who I happen to personally like and respect a lot, chose to veto it. Not everybody should be carrying a firearm, and a very inintrusive background check on somebody that's, you know, never broken a law shouldn't bother anybody, in my mind.
Well, you'd spoken of polarization in our culture a little bit earlier, and there do seem to be more and more incidents where police are encountering perpetrators who are very heavily armed. These shooters the other day had a backpack full of ammunition, apparently.
Yes.
Do you think there is a possibility that sometime soon, someday soon, the people in law enforcement may be on the verge of saying that the ease with which we Americans can acquire high-power firearms has gone past the danger point?
Well, I think some people have said that. I'm not sure that there's been one strong, solid voice, but I was a member of the Major City Police Chief, which is the 50 largest police departments in the United States, and Sheriff Gillespie, too, is a member, and they overwhelmingly support background checks for the ownership of firearms. And the simple reason being, and it's just common sense, somebody with mental illness, documented mental illness, or problems of repeated violence in their past or crimes in their past that would predict the possibility that they might use firearms on an innocent human being, be prevented from owning one. Firearms should be a right, but you should earn that right by being a good citizen and also have good mental capacity.
But do you think there could someday be that strong, solid voice that you spoke of, where police?
Well, the way the world's heading, I don't know how it can't not be, because you know, you see more and more of these incidences. You know, people are getting fed up with their kids getting killed and slaughtered in movie theaters and college campuses, and you know, whether these so-called Second Amendment supporters get it or not, their logic isn't working anymore because the facts are getting in the way.
You have had to talk to families. You've talked to widows.
I had to go one time. Mm. Sheriff Gillespie's had to do it seven times. There's no comparison. In the history of the police department, no sheriff's had to deal with it like Sheriff Gillespie.
He just had to talk to two.
Two yesterday. And I talked to him today. I called him this morning to see how he was doing. Doug's hung in there two terms, and you know, he's had just bad luck. The Metropolitan Police Department has suffered. I was counting today in my head. I think there's been seven that I can recall of four in car accidents, three in two in shootings, and search and rescue officer recently. And that's just unbelievable run of bad luck.
Well, you can empathize perhaps more than just about anybody else in Southern Nevada with what Sheriff Gillespie had to go through on Sunday. Talk a little bit about what did he have to go through?
Well, when you got to, you know, you don't do this over the phone. The sheriff goes to their homes and personally tells them, or at their work, and contacts their wife. In this case, it would be their wives in both cases. Department is very careful that they find out no other way. Hopefully, no cops call their wives and say, so-and-so got shot, and they call somebody else. We try as an organization to keep that communication very tight so that the next of kin, the family, is the first to know and understand, and the sheriff goes and does it personally, and you better talk to him and what the words he used. You go do that seven times, and you tell me you want to go to work the next day.
How do you hold it together when you are talking to the young widow, let alone
dig deep and you do it, you know. Dig deep and do it. And then when you walk out of there, it's been like you've been kicked in the gut 100 times. And yes, God for some help.
That's former Las Vegas Metro Police Chief Bill Young in an interview recorded yesterday afternoon.